I'm a little tired of the anti-everything strategy. I am very much interested in helping customers go solve the problems that they identify. I'm interested in working with the partners that they have identified. A ton of SDK's business, storage tech business, attaches to an IBM mainframe.
That's Jonathan Schwartz, CEO of Sun Microsystems, and this is Podtech.net. I'm Jason Lopez. Sun Microsystems, which dominated the server market during the dot-com boom, has been searching for major revenue drivers over the past 5 years. The company has been criticized, especially by the financial community, for its stumbles. But Schwartz says the market is growing so robustly that the promise for Sun looks good.
The Niagara processor, the T1, arguably excellent performance, excellent power efficiency. But I haven't seen Sun really capitalize on that as a differentiator. And since the announcement of Niagara, we've seen Intel, we've seen IBM, we've seen HP, we've seen all the other vendors get on the power and cooling bandwagon, start up marketing fog machines to obscure the potential technology lead that Sun might have had Sun really exploited it.
I agree with your characterization. I think they are fog machines. But I would refer you to the spec website where you can look at the benchmarks that are produced by a neutral third party, and you can see us at 3x the performance, at half the price, and a quarter of the power.
No, the benchmarks are great, but how
so
does
Paul,
that...
So, Paul, but so just to... I appreciate your enthusiasm, by the way. I really sense the affection you have for Sun.
You're beginning to see why I'm between the two of you.
you have to look, let me be very clear. As the chief executive officer of Sun Microsystems, I have to be concerned with the long-term value of the business we're building. The worst thing in the world I could do, and you know, I was joking around with another executive at Sun that according to some analysts, the best route forward would be to take a path, frankly, that's been adopted by some of our competitors. Let's go cut R&D to the bone. In fact, let's get rid of it all. $2 billion, man, $2 billion next quarter, we would be the most profitable IT company in the world. And we'd be relevant to you for about 15 minutes. So I want you to understand that I am deeply focused on financial performance. If you look at what you know, my team and I have done over the past couple years, it's boost gross margins by 4%, get growth going in the fundamental business, reduce operating expenses by nearly $1 billion. Now, frankly, we had a little bit of a headwind because we were going up against something called FAS 123, which says you have to now tax the fact you're trying to give the ownership in the company to your employees, which I think is just backwards. We have been, you know, looking at purchase price accounting and all kinds of gap effects, which, frankly, none of us really want to get, you know, involved in. But at the end of the day, I'm committed to delivering financial performance for our shareholders, but I'm also committed to making sure that we have a durable relationship with as many of you as possible. Because again, 4 years ago, and in fact, let me tell you, for those of you that don't read my blog, one of my favorite stories about the criticism of Sun's strategy was actually before I came to Sun. Scott was getting a lot of advice, and again, I wasn't a Sun employee at the time, to go adopt something called the Chicago Project. And everybody on the street was saying, get rid of Solaris, because Unix doesn't make any sense. The future is all about the Chicago Project. And now, for those of you that don't remember, the Chicago Project was Windows NT. And the companies that adopted Windows NT, most of them disappeared, because they lost their ability to differentiate. Because Scott stuck to his guns 10 years ago, when the internet actually came to the front, to the forefront of all of our thinking, we just boomed. We generated $7.5 billion in cash at a phenomenally attractive business model.
You were in the right place with the right time, with the right products, and you became the default choice.
Or I could claim we innovated in such a way that customers found value in what we were building. So 4 years ago, when the market said, we don't understand why you have your own operating system, we don't understand why you have your own chipset, we don't understand why you continue to invest in Java, we could have cut all of those. And then we could now be explaining, like some of our competition, why our only route forward was to drop price and hope that that increased the value of the company. Instead, I can talk to you about developer productivity. I can talk to you about data center optimization. I can talk to you about encryption in your data, managing information, provisioning your infrastructure. Those are things that my view, again, if you fall into the camp that views IT as a competitive weapon, those are things you care about. If all you care about is a cheaper laptop, I think there are, you know, some of our friends.
That's one side of the innovation equation. A few would argue that you guys have not innovated, but many would argue that sometimes you've lingered a bit too long. Lingered a bit too long with e-business, lingered a bit too long on the fight against Linux, lingered a bit too long on the fight against Intel, you know, based in servers.
Do I get to play the new guy card now, or can I wait till later?
How long have we been working together with you at Sun? You're not new anymore.
Yeah, 3 weeks. Yeah, we've had a long relationship. So I want to be very clear. I'm a little tired of the anti-everything strategy. I am very much interested in helping customers go solve the problems that they identify. I'm interested in working with the partners that they have identified. A ton of SDK's business, storage tech's business, attaches to an IBM mainframe. Those mainframes, look, one of my favorite experiences with a customer, I was with the CIO of a large, now bankrupt airline, who, when I went to talk to him about his mainframe, he looked at me and said, "Son, we purchased that before you were born. We will retire it after you die." So some infrastructure is going to hang around. And I want to be respectful of that because, frankly, that's a result of decisions that many of you all have made. And the worst thing in the world I believe I can do is walk in and make a headline for a journalist who says, "Finally, I've got something juicy and salacious to write about. I want to go focus on solving customers' problems."
So you're justifiably proud of your $2 billion R&D investment. And I know that Greg Papadopoulos and you and Mike Lehman are looking carefully at all the projects and all the business units to hopefully identify some of the overlapping efforts that are involved. I've got to believe that there's some reductions that can be made there. The other thing I worry about...
I believe so as well, Paul.
The other thing I worry about is that Sun is so focused on innovating and not clearly as focused on exploiting its own innovations. In your blog, you talked about a book called The Box, which is the story of container shipping. And it's very interesting that Malcolm McLean, who's the guy who was really able to profitably make a business of container shipping, is not the one who invented the container. That was invented by other people. Mm-hmm. And so my concern for Sun, for the long term, is that Sun will be better at innovating than at exploiting innovations. And I wonder what if that's on your agenda for somehow addressing and getting more out of the labs, more out of your $2 billion investment, and turning it into tangible value and profit.
If you look at one industry that's, I think, near and dear to this industry as well as others, and by the way, I do recommend the book. I think it's fascinating. Let's look at the history of aviation. The folks who make the engines that go on the airplanes, they mint money. It takes a lot of R&D, but they absolutely mint money. They sell those engines to people who make airplanes, who have a tougher time making money, but they certainly make some money. Those aircraft manufacturers then turn around and sell them to the airline industry. Now, the history of the airline industry has never made money. Just go back and look at the totality of write-offs.
And meaning the industry as a whole,
the industry as a whole, not any one particular provider. What that says is the folks who make money are the folks who have the fundamental R&D. Now, I'm not sure how much R&D is actually in a container right now, and that's perhaps not the best analogy. But in the history of the power generation business, it wasn't the folks who made light bulbs that made the money. It's the folks who made the generators. In the history of the internet, in my view, as I see it playing out, it's not going to be the companies that have, necessarily the gizmo that's in front of you. In many ways, I view the clients that we all look at, they'll all ultimately become functionally identical. And frankly, I think they'll all also approach free. Free handsets, free set-tops, I think that's just a wave that consumers respond to. I believe that most of the value in that marketplace will be in the modular infrastructure and how efficiently it can be run back in the data centers. That's certainly where we're going to focus. But unlike the aircraft engine business or unlike the generator business, I don't have the luxury of simply dismissing the downstream effects of who adopts the technology. Because in our business, there's a linkage, as you well know, from a software architecture perspective. We've got to pay attention to both. So yes, I'm absolutely focused on making sure we get every last ounce of productivity out of the R&D that we do. I think there's plenty of, I'll just give you one example of some efficiencies I see coming down the road. If you look at ZFS.
Which is your file system.
It's a 128-bit file system. And before you go asking why you need a 128-bit file system, it's not that you need 128 bits. It's that you might need a 65th bit. And all of you have 64-bit file systems, you should worry about that last little bit being added on. And so once that occurs...
Because of size of the file system.
You're all archiving an enormous amount of data, and none of you could possibly predict you'll archive less next year than you did this year. It's just good for business, and also it might actually be the law. So Solaris with ZFS, frankly, eliminates the need for RAID controllers. Why? Because ZFS is a resilient file system. It assumes the underlying substructure fails all the time. So do I want to be in the RAID controller business? No. I want to have an operating system that abstracts it away. So do I need to go build mainframes for the marketplace? No, because I don't think that's going to be the focal point for most enterprises. I think they want to look toward grids and scaled out infrastructure and software that knows how to handle and manage failure. That's certainly where we're going to be focusing our R&D. Because I agree with you, and I sincerely agree with you. We will be making choices. We will be making choices. We will have an agenda. We will certainly be looking forward. But those choices are the ones that promote your choice and promote your ability to choose from disparate competitive vendors. In the long run, you know, the example I give with our tools, and no, it's not a revenue generator, but nobody makes money on tools. The example I gave a year ago when somebody asked me, why is NetBeans getting so much better? I said, for one great reason, Microsoft and Eclipse. It's called competition. Competition fuels innovation that allows us to improve our products.
But innovation and competition is also fueled by openness. I can't let you off the stage without asking the obligatory question about open sourcing Java.
Sure.
Because you've mentioned Java as a core component of your success in a number of areas. I'm just wondering, why is it so hard to get to an OSI compatible licensing model for Java without it fragmenting?
Why is it so hard? Standards in the marketplace are defined by two things. Number one, volume. Number two, standards bodies. So the largest distributor of desktop software in the marketplace is?
Microsoft.
And what's the history of distribution of Java with Microsoft? It's been marked by litigation. So I have to worry about that. Now, secondarily, I also have to worry about I don't control Java. There are 1,052 members of the Java community process that I would like to consult about how we open source Java.
But you are the one source for Java. You're the one source. They have to come to you to license them.
We are the one source for the brand and for the compatibility definition. We are not the one source for innovation. That would be bad. Sony drove a lot of Blu-ray. BMW drives a lot of the dashboard. You know, there's lots of companies. Oracle and IBM, frankly, have taken the lead with Sun in defining Java EE. So we have a community of people that we need to honor and respect if we want compatibility. And, you know, when I talk to an individual comes to me and says, you should just GPL Java, you know, I turn around and ask you, you know, would you like to see a GPL Java? Would you like to see a Java that fragments or forks? Does compatibility matter to you? And what I hear from customers consistently is, we didn't think it mattered much, but then we swapped out of one vendor and we got another and it just worked and the integration was trivial. So compatibility is one of the value propositions. Now, I don't think that has to be, you know, orthogonal to open sourcing, which is why we announced yesterday, yes, we will open source, but we want to be careful about how we do it. I think there's ample opportunity. And again, I'm not worried about free software having an impact on revenue. Because again, most IT organizations are disallowed from running free software. I mean, if you're running a 911 network and something happens, you don't want to go to the folks running IT and saying, who are you going to call? Well, it's free. We downloaded it. That's not how it works. You know, since open sourcing Solaris, we've seen a rush of Solaris revenue, the most aggressive growth that we've seen in the history of the company. That's a good thing. They're not orthogonal. Open sourcing products has an impact on innovation. It's about the folks across the hall who want to join a community more than it is about folks who are just looking for a better price.
I'd still love to see you make a connection between that innovation and the money that people write to you.
Top three reasons why Sun will be more successful 2 years from now than it is today.
The best leading indicator of the success in front of us is the fact that we've seen a rush of developers and new customers coming back to Sun. And I'll give you another great example. Again, splitting the world into the developers who are very price sensitive, respond to things like free and open source software, and IT buyers who are less sensitive to that. But again, these folks tend to be leading indicators, a lot of the choices these folks make. We announced that our Niagara servers would be available for free trial a couple months ago. And by free trial, I mean literally come to the website, register, we'll send you a free server. And we saw a big rush of demand. And the most satisfying part of the demand is 60% of it was from customers that had never done business with Sun before, which means we were reaching out of our install base, creating more of an economic opportunity for our developers. And so the adoption of our tools, the fact that we can reach out of our install base, that's proof to me that there's going to be ample market opportunity. But just so you understand how we tend to think about the marketplace, the demand for the internet, the demand for network infrastructure, whether you do business with Sun today or not, the demand for what we deliver, which is secure, scalable infrastructure to run large-scale network services, the demand for that will never go down for as long as we're on this earth, never. And I refute. I don't think anybody could possibly assert anything, you know, other than that. because all of us are going to consume more digital music, richer websites, we're going to do more business online. That's all just kind of a given. There's no other internet I'm worried
about. And that will make Sun more successful.
No, that proves that we have a market. Look, there are three things you look at when you're investing in a business. First and foremost is you look at the market opportunity. So not even the oil industry can look forward to as much demand as we see, because they got to worry about fuel cells and ethanol. I'm not going to worry about that. Second thing you look at is, do you have the core technologies that are relevant to that marketplace? Do I think Solaris and Java are more relevant this year than they were 5 years ago? Undeniably. Are they going to be even more relevant 2 years from now? No question in my mind. Third thing you look at is, do you have an effective team of people who can marshal the resources and the energies to go pursue that market and deliver on it? And frankly, we've had 3 weeks of the new team, and I am thrilled to death. I think I've got the strongest, smartest, most effective group of people working at Sun that we've ever had in the history of the company. We've got boomerangs coming back all over the place, folks saying, hey, I want to come back to Sun. You know, I asked Ed Zander on stage yesterday if he wanted to come back, and he said, do you have a job for me? So I'm not sure he was serious, but it makes the point. There's a lot
What's
of
What's your job, Jonathan? Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us.
Likewise. It's always a pleasure. Okay.